Welcome one, welcome all to episode 2 of Flippers Always Win. I am your host, Flip. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to everybody who tuned in for episode 1. I've received a lot of messages throughout the week from friends, as well as other people I hadn't caught up with in a little while, who seem to enjoy the episode. And that's a very pleasant surprise. I very much appreciate you. Maybe we can get like a hashtag, like Flipper Fam, Flipper Fans, Flipper. You know what? Why don't you just tell me? Tell me in the DMs. We're going to get a nickname going for this ever-growing, exponentially growing fan base that we've got going here. Let's keep the good times rolling into episode 2. You know, last week I waxed poetic about my love for Survivor and what it means to me as a person in this opening segment. And while the love hasn't waned, I think this week I want to focus a little bit more on the game at hand that we have in Survivor 47. Now, let's back it up a little bit here. When I had just gotten out of college for the first few years afterwards, my friends and I, we started an app. It was called Let's Pick. And essentially, it was an app where you could create and play in your own fantasy games, create your own contests. But it didn't have to be about sports. It could be about anything. And Survivor, Big Brother, the reality genre was a big place that we were looking to land a lot of users. The entire premise behind Let's Pick came from the fact that my friends and I in college, we were big sports fans. We loved playing fantasy games and, you know, doing like the March Madness brackets, but it wasn't enough. We needed more. So we created our own games. We created our own crazy games with weird scoring and strange rules. And it was so much fun. Some of the best times that we had in college were drafting our teams for these crazy games across baseball and college basketball and football, whatever it is. So we come up with this app, Let's Pick, which allows you to predict essentially anything you want and win prizes and compete with friends. And really what it comes down to is predicting things, specifically being right when you make predictions, is just about the best feeling that you can have in life. It happens 10% of the time. When I make a prediction, whether it's a sports bet or some sort of unsubstantiated prediction about life in general, whatever the topic may be, I would say I have about a 10% accuracy rate. 90% of the time, dead wrong. But the 10% of the time that I'm right makes the 90% worth it every single time. There is nothing better in the world than being right about something that wasn't obvious in front of you to begin with. It makes you feel like a genius. You're not a genius. I am not a genius. I'm just Flip. The whole point is that last week on the initial episode, we're going to toot our own horn here a little bit. I had a prediction and it came true right away. The next episode, actually, of Survivor 47. Let's play the clip. The first time that they go to tribal, Gabe is going to find a way to get TK out. I think TK has got to hope that they win out, basically. That's right. You literally heard it here first, unless somebody else was saying this too, which is somewhat likely. Gabe going after TK. You know, I know this game. Like the back, and no, I'm just kidding. I read something on an edit and made an assessment, and it was right. Maybe this has happened 3 times ever where it actually accurately comes true. Probably the first time ever that it accurately comes true immediately. So I'm going to give myself props. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this false sense of confidence that I've built and use it towards making a lot of predictions that don't have any sort of bearing or likelihood of happening. We're going to make a parlay. For those of you unfamiliar, a parlay is a sports betting term where you predict at least 2 things. It can be 2 or more things to happen. They all have to happen in order for you to win the bet, get the payout. Even if you put a 10-leg parlay down, 9 of them go right, 1 of them's wrong, you lose, you don't get any money. So we're going to put down a Survivor parlay here. It's going to be a 3-leg parlay. They all have to be right for this to be considered right at the end of the day. And if I do get all 3 right, I win a lot of money. You are all going to pay me a lot of money. And I'm going to hold all of you to that. Now, you might be saying, well, what happens if you don't get it right? Do you pay us, Flip? And the answer is no. So without further ado, let's go into this 3-leg parlay. We're going to have 1 leg from each tribe. So my prediction for the Lavo tribe is first time they go to tribal, Rome plays his idol, three votes on Genevieve from Teeny, Kishan, and Asia. And Genevieve is the first out of that tribe. We know Rome has the idol here. We saw Teeny get into a little bit of trouble with Rome, getting caught red-handed, showing Kishan where the idol was. But I think Teeny's social game is good enough, early on at least, that they will work with Kishan, and they will find the votes, maybe with Asia, the three of them vote to get Genevieve out on that first time they go to tribal, because Rome's playing it on himself, and they might think that Rome likely will be voting for Teeny. So they got to find somebody else to dump votes on. And I'm not sure that Rome possesses the social skill to rope in Genevieve, Saul, and him to put three on Teeny or even understand what's going to be happening. Considering Genevieve has had the most purple of purple edits so far through two episodes, leads me to think that they're not going to want to get Saul out because they need him for challenges. That leaves Genevieve. Prediction from Gata, otherwise known as the Yellow Tribe. The next two to be gone will be Sam and Annika. I also do think that there's a really, really high chance that Andy is the last person standing from this tribe, very similar to Emily in Survivor 45. But I'm not willing to put all my money on that leg. Instead, I'll go a little bit of a safer route here and say Sam and Annika, next two to go, in that order. I think we saw at the end of this last episode, this little tiff between Annika, Sam, and Sierra. And I think that there's a decent chance that Sam has made himself too big of a target. Andy will team up with Annika and Rachel to get him out of there. Sierra, I think, is probably safe for a little while there because I don't think they get her out before Sam unless they think, oh, we need Sam for the challenges, so let's take out his right-hand woman. I personally don't think that Andy necessarily is going to have loyalty to anybody. So I don't think that he's beholden to Sam necessarily, especially if he finds out that Sam does have that beware advantage. Then he'll know that Sam was lying to him. I think that Sam, although he seemed like he was running things in this past episode on that tribe, I think it's all going to come collapsing onto him sooner rather than later, playing a little bit too hard, a little bit too fast. So I'm going to say that he and Annika are the next to go because I don't think that Annika is super long for that tribe anyway. And finally, Tuku, Gabe is going to get the winner edit, but Sue is going to be the winner. Sue and Gabe, I could see both of them being in the final three together. And I think that there's a decent chance that Sue takes it at that point. If a mom gets to the end, she's winning this thing, at least a mom that has built good social relations. I think in Survivor 44, we had Heidi near the end, and I felt like she didn't necessarily build the bonds that somebody like Julie from Survivor 45, who, had she gotten there, probably gets the win. Somebody like Maria, had she gotten to the end last season, and of course she also had Compliments to go with it, but she likely had a decent chance of winning before she made the most vindictive vote in Survivor history. Moms would be getting closer and closer to winning this thing. And I think Sue just might be that overlooked mom who gets to the end and everybody realizes, we really underestimated you. And you deserve to win for fooling us the entire time that you were more than just somebody's mom out here. You were playing the game. I do think Gabe is going to be the consensus pick at some point here, especially once we get to the merge. If he survives early in the merge, people are going to be pointing to him as the winner. I believe he will be able to work with Sue deep into the game. They complement each other. And I think at the end of the day, bringing a sweet old woman or a seemingly sweet old woman to the end, even if you played this masterful game, you're not beating the sweet old woman at the end. So in totality, we have a three-leg parlay. Lavo tribe, Genevieve first out from Yellow tribe, that's Gata. Sam and Annika, next two out from Tuku, Gabe, winner edit, Sue, your actual winner. Another shock ending. I would say that I would place the odds on this particular parlay to be about plus 1456. So no chance that it happens, no chance it hits, but those are my favorite bets to make. The ones that have absolutely no chance. there's no fun in saying, I think that Andy's not going to do well. Well, yeah, duh. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. You also miss close to 100% of the shots that you take from full court, if in the arena at all. But every now and again, if you make one, it makes up for the other 99% that you missed. We've got a great show. Mary and Greg are coming up, and we'll be right back after the following message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in lieu of ad space, I wanted to talk to you about a food that is very strange in a good way to me. And that food is, of course, orzo. Now, we made a big orzo dish for dinner this week as our meal prep, and it called for 2 cups of orzo for 8 servings. And I'm pouring the orzo, which I have made before, and I'm realizing there's no way there's enough orzo in here for 8 servings. It feels like maybe there's enough for, like, I don't know, a couple meals. Lo and behold, orzo is there's a lot of it. Orzo, there's a lot of it. All right. Welcome back to Flippers Always Win. Super excited to have these next 2 guests on episode 2, Mary and Greg. And before you introduce yourselves, let me just say that the only reason that this podcast exists is, I believe, because of Greg's suggestion that I should start a podcast. And I don't know if that was made flippantly, one could say.
Good pun.
Good pun. Thank you. Mary is my cousin, my one cousin on my dad's side. Greg and Mary are married. Each of you have your own individual Survivor fandom journeys that have combined together. But let's take the listeners through how it got started for each of you. Mary, why don't you go first?
So my Survivor journey started in the late fall of 2021. And that was on my maternity leave with our son. I, as people kind of say, you know, when you're on maternity leave, oh, what's your maternity leave show going to be? Because you, in theory, have so much time during the day and hours that you're just sitting on the couch, which is kind of half true. And this is true. I had never watched one full episode of Survivor before like December 2021. So I just kind of stumbled upon Survivor for like the 2 free seasons that were available on Netflix at the time. And I was like, I just need something I can watch. I turn on Netflix, watch Survivor, whatever seasons those were. They were like the early years ones, like HD level. So they weren't like the SD ones, but like they were good seasons. And I just got hooked and then went to every single streaming service that where I could watch some free season of Survivor.
It was like the only thing we actually bought on streaming.
And then I finally went to buying. I was like, I'm buying full seasons of Survivor. So we probably own like 10 seasons on Survivor. I probably watched literally 8 seasons in 5 months. And Greg watched all of those as well. So he was on the maternity leave Survivor journey.
Mary, what was the time frame? Because we may have been binging Survivor and not doing anything else at the same time and not even knowing it. That sounds about the time that I started rediscovering it too.
December 2021 through May 2022.
That was like the height of my depression.
It was also the height of Omicron. It was the height of the world on fire. So what better thing to do than escape and watch Survivor?
We were no longer sanitizing groceries, but we were watching Survivor
episodes.
My journey is very similar to Mary's. I started watching during the maternity leave. I maybe watched 2 full episodes in its entirety up until that point in time. I knew of Survivor, like I knew like the Richard season 1 winner, like I knew all that stuff. But I just, it didn't mean anything to me because I didn't watch it.
It really was and still is such a bonding point for us.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like it was a huge, fun, unexpected bonding tool that still is like a bonding experience.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the what ifs
with
each other and would you make this merge?
Yeah, would we do this? And
Our Survivor watching has been buckshot. We find a season, we watch it, and then we go all over the place. Like we go forward, backwards, but really we've drawn the line seemingly at HD and current.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to go to SD because we've missed like some of the Aussie seasons we haven't seen in SD, like some of the stuff like that. I feel like we're missing.
In terms of whether your actual journey as discovering it together as a couple is unique, to pretend to be Jeff Probst for a second.
Yes.
Everybody's Survivor journey is unique. And that's why it makes it such a cool experience. There's nothing like Survivor. So in terms of what actually did hook each of you, since it's a bonding point in the relationship, something you're both passionate about, what is it exactly about the show that gets you? What makes you tick with it?
Well, it's definitely the strategy part, number one. But the number two element would be playing the what would I do game, which is part of the strategy and all of it, and just kind of the masochistness of how I would be eaten alive by mosquitoes.
Yeah, I would say it's similar for me. What I like, what I've noticed more and more, obviously they probably have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage. So like in the beginning, you're meeting some people and they're like highlighting some people, and then you totally might miss some other interesting characters in the show that become way more important, obviously, because they make the merge and they go on and their stories develop. But it's interesting kind of like looking back and saying, wow, like I totally missed those sides of the stories. I was going to say for Mary, she loves watching it and knowing she's not there, but on the comfort of her own couch.
Oh, yeah, that's accurate.
How would you each play the game if you were out there? We'll start with Mary. I know that maybe if you're at a reward challenge early and one of the rewards is a mosquito net, maybe you're going balls to the wall on that particular challenge and letting it all hang out. Outside of physical elements, what would you do out there? Like, what kind of player do you think you would be if there's a comparison to somebody you've seen?
Oh, I think I would definitely be like Coach. No, just kidding.
I was like, oh my God, you got to get out there. We need another coach. We need a female coach.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I would want to be low key, but I wouldn't be able to be. Like I would, it's one of those things.
True.
Yeah. Like where I would think like, I want to play it cool and I'm going to like try and not ruffle any feathers and just blend in and don't talk strategy too much. And then I would just blow it. I would just start in at some point, probably a couple challenges in, I would start trying to strategize a little bit too hard or something. I feel like, or be annoyed by someone who is annoying. I feel like I would not have the patience. My goal would be to be the first person voted out after the merge. That would be my absolute goal, because I would want to make it to the merge and be on the jury, but then get to the hotel and then get to participate, but in my glow up and vote in the end. Like that's my goal.
These days, you have to be like the third person voted out at least after the merge to actually make the jury, because they merged so early.
Okay, let me revise. Yeah. My goal is to be the first person on the jury so that I'm voted out right away, but still make it onto the jury so that I can go back to the hotel, get in a bed, do the glow up, come out for my reveal, and still have access to the game.
You want to be the first one at the tribal council after you're voted out. Do you want to be the first person who comes in and he says, and here's Mary from the jury, and you're like in full makeup and you're in like best dress, and everybody's like, whoa.
Yeah, that would be the goal. Yeah. Yes.
That's fantastic. I love that. You know, let's say things are actually going well for you in the game. You have a good social standing, which I think you would, because if you actually did make the merge knowing you, I think that would mean that you do have a good social standing. Would you still be like, guys, get me out. My time to go is now.
I think I would obviously try to win, but screw that. No, vote me out. Get me to the hotel.
Okay. All right. And then Greg, what do you think you would do out there? And how far do you think you would get?
That's a good question, Flip. I think we have very different strategy than what Mary would have. I think I could do pretty well in the challenges. I would keep a low profile, be amicable with people, kind of like what I do in my normal life, I guess. Like I wouldn't ruffle feathers. I wouldn't try to ruffle feathers. I think it takes a lot to kind of get to me. But I also think I'd be my own worst enemy, and I would believe somebody and walk into a trap.
Yes, agree.
Like, I would get blindsided 100%.
So you're getting a heavy blindside.
Yeah, I would totally get blindsided.
People would vote him out because they'd think he could win, I think. Like, right. One of those, he's too nice, people like him, and he could be a physical threat.
Greg, I had one question on Greg. So you said it takes a lot to get to you. Let's say somebody does get to you. Why did they get to you? What's the type of person that does get to you? What's the situation that actually does make you ruffled, so to speak?
Overly loud, rambunctious, obnoxious all the time, like nonstop. I'd like to think that that wouldn't get to me and I'd be able to separate that like mentally and be able to keep like the mental aspect, like, no, maybe keep this person around, their shield. But I also know the other part of me would be like, I can't spend another day on the beach sleeping on bamboo with this annoying person. And I need some like peace and quiet. So that might be something that could get to me.
That leads really perfectly into episode 2 of Survivor 47, because there is an obnoxious person who's loud, who might get to you, I feel like, and his name is TK. Now, was that a good move for that tribe? Because even though he is obviously very obnoxious and maybe hard to be around, he obviously was probably their best physical competitor. Is it worth it for them? Is it worth getting rid of somebody annoying to now put yourself at risk of losing challenges?
I respected Tiana for doing the TK vote. It's one thing to say like, okay, I'm just going to stick with the physical guy here and keep that kind of in my pocket instead of thinking like, okay, we could still somehow muster through this and who do I want to create like tight bonds with? So I was happy that she did that.
I would have kept TK personally, probably voted Sue. In the beginning, you kind of need to win challenges. And actually, Sue was a beast in the beginning. Like the very first, they were painting her as not a physical asset, but I think the opposite. I think she was a very good physical asset. I think she was like, she was carrying these giant puzzle pieces around. Like, she's really good. But I also think early on, when you're talking about like a shield, like bring somebody who could like take the, be like a lightning rod and deflect from you. I think TK could be that person. So if he could be a physical asset and also be somebody who could attract attention away from you, that might be something beneficial to a game.
Which is interesting because you just said that would be the one type of person.
Right, exactly.
You're just kidding. So exactly. It's easy to say.
You see the problem I'm facing here.
Yeah, it's a big dilemma, and that's why you were the deciding vote last night.
Right.
It was actually Greg out there. So one interesting thing that also happened, Gabe plays his idol on himself.
Yeah, that was weird.
We said that was a mistake.
That was weird.
So personally, I'm watching it with Julia at the time, and we're both going, what? What's going on? I think I figured out why, but who knows? He didn't really go looking for the idol in the first place. He stumbled upon it and sort of was just like, okay, I got to go for it now. He had already had this reputation in the tribe of being somebody who was trying to do too much, even though that was not really his original intention. He got rid of the idol so that none of that could be relevant to him.
Yeah, that's what we thought too.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm just going to not have this burn a hole in my pocket.
Right.
I know at least I'm safe tonight. And now they can't think I'm a threat and that I have some idol that I'm faking it.
You know, I know you guys haven't watched SD seasons, but you've watched older seasons where the idol was everything, right?
Yeah.
And so it just speaks to the evolution of the game, whether it's good, bad, or somewhere in between, where in earlier seasons, if you had the idol, it was almost basically a ticket to like the finale episode. And now you've got somebody saying, I don't want it. Do you feel like the game is more interesting when the idol has maybe less value? Or do you feel like the game is more interesting when things circle around that one big power? Maybe it's somewhere in the middle.
I think it's changed a lot. Now they talk about how the game moves so fast. Like right from the get-go, people are idol hunting. And I don't know if that's always the best move. I think that it's made the show much more of a relationship aspect because people now are much more aware that the idol is a target, whereas earlier, like you said, it was like a ticket.
Yeah, I do kind of wish in terms of the show that there's an evolution. Like, I feel like the beware advantage, shock and value has kind of worn off for me. Everyone takes the beware advantage, except for Andy. It seems like people are also bringing other people into their idol knowledge much sooner.
Well, that's
like,
the social.
Right,
now
that's what I mean.
So
it's
different.
Like, oh, I found the beware advantage. Like, let's go. You know, and so then it changes things that way.
If you find an advantage and you don't tell the people that you trust immediately, that's almost worse than the benefit of even having it in the first place. And Who's to say how adding a bunch of different powers and changing them up in the new era, what the effect of it actually intentionally was by the producers? But the first couple seasons, I felt like it wasn't really quite fluid. I feel like it's actually hitting its rhythm of blending itself into the edit well, where the chaos and drama when a power is found is on some level manufactured, yes, but it's not as forced as it once was. And maybe that's just us getting used to it. I feel like it's getting more fluid this season and last season too. How do you feel about the fluidity now compared to like a couple of years ago where we all were sort of jarred by all the changes?
I don't know if they got rid of this officially, but I like that they no longer are doing that thing where you have to like yell out like pig's feet or something at a challenge, like to get two other people on board.
Oh, right.
Like I think
right,
there's
right.
some things that they
like
have.
The intra-tribe idol building.
Right. Like yeah. I'm glad that
or inter-tribe.
Has seemingly moved on in some ways. I wish that there was some other kind of like interesting twist to maybe a whole season. Like
I want a theme. Give me a theme.
Right.
Back.
We want the themes and like some big thing.
Real quick, on the spot. Theme right now.
Theme. Oh my God. Maybe like a US versus Europe, like a Ryder Cup theme.
They'd have to really edit that one hard, I think. We might see some weird stuff come out on that one.
Yeah.
Maybe they could do Democrats versus Republicans.
Oh. Oh. Well, I mean, yeah.
Just to be timely and in theme.
Oh, God, there's so much we could say about that. I'm going to say none of it.
Yeah, we can pass, but it's an idea.
Let's talk about the other tribes real quick. You mentioned Andy. He didn't take the beware advantage. He left it there for later.
I mean, there are no words. There are no words. There's only silence and shaking of heads. He seems like a helpless dog, like a helpless puppy kind of wandering around. It's almost sad in the sense that he seems like so unsure of himself that he doesn't even know what to do.
Maybe one person, since it's become a power, has like not taken it, maybe.
Yeah.
And certainly nobody who was as low on the totem pole as him. That confessional where he finds the beware advantage and says, I'm going to put it back for later. It almost kind of reminds me of a scene from The Office where Michael Scott is like thinking like master plan and like giggles at the camera, like, and then it just immediately backfires on him because like Jim is in the corner, panned to the corner, just like, he's a mess. I don't know if you watched the end of the episodes, like after the vote where they showed the preview. Annika confronts Sam and Sierra and says, are you dating?
Yes, yes. She could be on the chopping block.
They're not getting rid of Andy anytime soon.
For the shield purpose. Like, we think Andy's just the human shield.
Typically, in these seasons where you think someone's going to go early, they don't.
That tribe is going to use Andy as a human meat shield, probably to their own disadvantage, because every time somebody thinks that they can just use him, they're going to get blindsided. Like, Annika's going to think, oh, we're just going to be able to get Andy. She's probably going to be the next to go. That's the problem with keeping a person like this in the game at all. Eventually, he's just going to take your spot later. Right. And we see it all the time, and people just don't think about it on the island up there. So that's that tribe. We'll see what happens there. Red tribe. We haven't seen as much screen time as them because they keep winning. But we do have a situation. Rome, who, in my opinion, is actually even worse at the game than Andy. if that's at all possible. He is worse, I guess better in the sense that he does have the idol. He has it for one. I assume that he knows that he's going to be probably target number one when they go to that first tribal. So now somebody's in trouble. And that somebody seems like maybe it's Teeny because she sort of blew it, right?
Yeah.
Right. I think that Teeny will make it through. I don't think Teeny will be the first to go on red.
I think because she has such good social standing, she might be able to work with Kishan, maybe, who she seems to be close with. And if they think that Rome is going after Teeny, maybe they can change the vote to like a Genevieve or a Saul, potentially.
Spoiler alert on my end. I think Saul is going to be a dark horse in this. He's a really strong physical threat, and I think he's got a level head. I don't think he's going to win necessarily, but I think he's definitely going to make the merge, and I think he's going to go pretty far.
I agree with that, and I want it to happen because even though we haven't seen a lot of him, he seems like a relatable guy. He gets annoyed at the same things that I get annoyed at from watching.
Yeah, I liked that vibe. I got that too.
Yeah, and he's been like the eye rolls about Rome, I think.
Yeah.
Mostly just about Rome, because everything is about Rome there. The guy is insufferable. But you know, Saul is obviously the biggest physical threat, I believe. Maybe him and Kishan on the Lavo tribe. And he's been a beast so far.
Right.
Okay. You can't have a survivor conversation with Flip without talking about a winner pick, no matter how early it is in the game. So we're not just going to do winner picks from each of you. We're also going to do can't win picks. So with that being said, Mary, who's your early winner pick and your early can't win pick? And for the purposes of the can't win pick, let's avoid Andy and Rome.
Okay. I'm going with Kishan as my win pick because I think he does have that low-key mannerism. He's not going to ruffle feathers right away. He's an emergency room doctor. He can probably handle himself under pressure. He's smart. So I think he could be an interesting pick. And then for can't win, I'm going with Sam. Okay. I think he's just too bro sports oriented that I feel like he might turn some people off. Like he won't connect with them as much. And then I think this storyline with Sierra might hurt him, that he's kind of bonded too quickly with Sierra and they're going to be targets on the back.
By the end of the Yellow Tribe segment on this last episode, episode two, I was starting to think, is this whole thing going to actually backfire on Sam? Has he made himself so big of a threat by people knowing, like almost everybody at this point essentially knows he's got this power. They know that he's basically a showmance. So can Andy, would he do this? What wouldn't Andy do? Would he team up with Annika and Rachel potentially if they view Sam as a threat to get him out early? Again, that would be really bad for their challenge hopes, I think. But as we know in the new era, as we saw from this past episode, that doesn't always matter. So I think Sam's got a short shelf life too. If he makes it to the merge, I think he probably goes out fairly early there.
Agreed.
I'm going to go out on the limb here. I think I'm going to pick Tiana as my shot in the dark, so to speak. A lot of times you find the person who's in the middle tends to be a valuable pick, and then they kind of work their way up towards the top of the power spectrum. Like I think playing the middle, if you do it right, you could go undetected, and then you make a move to get to the top. So I think Tiana could do that. Can't win, I'm going to go Kyle. JT kind of has the very similar vibe to Kyle.
We've seen him before.
You know, I think they have similar auras about them. I think Kyle will make the merge. I don't think he's going to win.
I think a big reason why Kyle can't win is because he's on the bottom of his tribe right now. If he does make the merge, actually, though, I'm gonna disagree a little bit. I think he's got a good chance to go far because at that point he's going to blend in with people. And I think he is so nice and like so unassuming. And like, if he can get to the merge, I actually do see him as a threat, but I get what you're saying that people could pick up on his charm. One bold prediction about the game overall, just anything at all. Doesn't have to make any sense. Something maybe you want to see happen. One bold prediction. What might it be?
Bring back. What's the Survivor Bidding Wars where they,
the auction,
bring back. Yeah. I think they're going to have,
they did that last season.
Did they do that last season? Okay, well, bring it back.
Again.
Auction's coming back. Okay.
Auction's coming back.
I think Rachel is going to be a little wily character. She's stealing the rice in her shorts pocket, which I thought was super bold and interesting. I was like, go, girl. So loved that for her, even though it didn't work out. So I'm going to say that she's going to be bold. My bold prediction is Rachel might be a bold dark horse.
The interesting thing about that was like, okay, yeah, you can't take the rice. And I think it's debatable whether she earned it or not. I feel like Jeff calling her out like that, maybe not in her own tribe, doesn't put a target on her because, you know, more rice for the tribe. But the other two tribes probably now see her as like, oh, she's sneaky. So I agree with you. I agree with your assessment because even if that wasn't her intention, if she gets to the merge once she gets there, she's going to have to play this wily game because people are going to have anything to latch on to about her being a sneak. She's going to have to navigate that.
I agree with that. And I'd also say, I mean, maybe it is written down somewhere, but I was impressed by that move because I'm like, is it stipulated anywhere that you can't take stuff? Like, I feel like people do sneaky things all the time in Survivor that I thought it was surprising.
Yeah.
That it was called out, unless it was for some reason like not edible, you know, that he was like calling it out. I just thought there's like no rules kind of. So I was like surprised that that was a rule.
But you have to know if you're taking rice, everything's on camera. Even if you go, what are you going to go back to your camp and cook it not on camera?
No, but I'm saying it's filmed. Jeff didn't have to say anything. It could have just been, wow, smart move. We wouldn't have thought of that. We never would have thought someone would take it.
That's true.
Is what I'm saying. And whether that was against the rules or not.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying, Flip?
Oh, yeah. I get it. I don't know if maybe they haven't shown it before. It was obviously an interesting TV moment. I don't know if he needed to do that because I feel like it affects her game. And I don't know what the actual rules are. You know,
Obviously, he can't do it.
Could that have just been done off camera? What's the reason to make it so punitive outside of entertainment value?
Has Jeff blown up someone's spot like that before?
Not so much, I feel like, for a thing that, sure, it was against the rules on, like, what, like a 3 out of 10 level? You know, I guess when you're out there, trying to get extra food is a really, really big thing. So maybe it means more out there than it does to us sitting at home, you know, ordering my fried chicken wings.
You know what also they need to bring back is the live reunion. I feel like that's where you can address stuff like that. But without that, you never get to address it.
Like, we used to sit down and watch the reunions.
And love that.
I agree that the live reunions were back in the day were so great. And obviously they moved to this right after reunion for COVID reasons. And I'm sure that plays a part in why they don't do it anymore. Maybe some financial reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just not the same. You want some reflection time. Honestly, the only new era reunion moment that I remember to this point was last season when Maria revealed that she didn't vote for Charlie. And then we had that reaction in real time. That was the first time I feel like in a lie in this new era one where it was like a whoa moment.
Yeah, that we referenced that vote as being like the biggest betrayal of all time.
I think that was the biggest betrayal I've seen. And again, we haven't seen every episode, but every season. But in what we've seen, I think that was the biggest, I guess you can call it, blindside vote from like a team of two going essentially all the way to the end and then that happening.
Yeah, we talked about that. I remember the three of us and you two obviously texting about that after the finale. I said it, you all said it, and Flippers Always Win wasn't a podcast at the time, so we weren't able to address that. But we're going to address it right now, is that Maria is the worst, in my opinion. I talk about being a sore loser, but she was trying to do exactly what Charlie did to her. Exactly. Like, it wasn't like, oh, Charlie went out of his way. They both were trying to do it. And for her to not only vote against him, but for it to be the vote that cost him, because it would have been a tie. And Ben said later that he would have voted for Charlie.
Wow.
Kenzie's a great winner and she deserved to win. She's one of the best social players ever. But Charlie deserved to win that season just as much, if not more. And so for that to be the way that he lost it, it just feels unfair. And a lot of times in Survivor, unfair isn't the word. For that particular vote, there was nothing about that that felt fair.
Yes.
Like I said at the beginning of this segment here, you know, Mary, my cousin Greg, cousin-in-law, is that the correct?
I think that's the technical term.
The technical term. We'll have to look that one up.
You can also be cousin Greg.
We can say cousin Greg. When we get together often, it's with our family. And in this new era of Survivor, we have these three tribes of six. And it just so happens that when we get together, we have six adults in the room. So without saying what your strategy would be, when the six of us are put on a tribe on the island, who's winning that final six? Who's the winner of our family final six between cousin Greg, cousin Mary, cousin Flip? For me, Uncle Henry, that's Mary's dad. Uncle Alan for Mary, my father, and Kathy, stepmom. Who's winning?
I would love to see Uncle Alan win.
Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't we all?
I would love to see Uncle Alan.
I mean, after 44 seasons of fantasy baseball and no win,
he's got to win.
I feel like he would make
a very good and powerful end of the season pitch to the jury, us. And I feel like he'd come up with some sort of like statistician numbers, like impressive fact figures.
Yeah.
To just sweep it.
I would love to see Uncle Alan take it.
Yeah.
I really would.
100. He must be on this podcast. All you Flipper fans out there, the world is ready. You want Alan to come on the show.
No show is made worse by Alan.
It will only be made better. Is he watching this season?
No, I used to watch with him when I was like little, like the first 5 seasons he watched. It was like a big cultural national phenomenon Survivor, not Alan yet, back in the day. But that's coming, don't worry. He's about to have his brat summer. He's not super into the genre, but he did listen. I think he maybe is listening to the episodes of these. I don't know. He does, you know, whatever. I think he'll probably listen to this one with his niece and nephew on the podcast. It's great that we all want Alan to win. Who do I think is going to win, answering my own question? I think it's going to be the person who maybe could sneak their way to the end the best. And for me, that's Aunt Kathy.
I think
that everybody is going to be focused on trying to get, honestly, Mary out.
Wow.
I think Mary's the biggest threat. I think Mary's the biggest threat by far. And I think that speaks to why you think you're not going that far out there when you get on the island. I think that I'm the obvious threat, but Mary's the actual threat. I see a final three of Greg, Alan, and Kathy. I don't think Henry has any chance, no offense. I think that even if he gets to the final two, he's just going to be too mean to the other person. He's going to be like, they didn't do something right. How could you vote for them?
Like, that's true.
Yeah. So no, he's not getting votes at the end, even if he gets there. I just feel like he's going to be too cutting.
It's always tough when you make the finals and get a no vote, like a goose egg.
Look, I'll throw him a pity vote because there's no way I'm getting to the end. I'll throw Henry a pity vote. It's not that he wouldn't be good at the game potentially. It's just that he would just get pissed off like at somebody and that would be that.
Right? Yes, that is a very good assessment. Someone would one of us would do something like trying to steal the rice or do something that was a little bit bold or outside the step of rules and regulation, and that would not go over well and he would get very fixated.
I agree with that. My boot order in my head, for whatever reason I have, is Mary, Henry, Flip. And then we're doing a final two, obviously. So that means we got Kathy, Alan, and Greg in the final three. I think Greg goes to that point. But you probably win immunity between the three of them. If you don't win immunity, you're gone.
Fire.
Well, Alan's definitely not winning fire, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It comes down to Kathy and Greg at that point. I don't know Kathy's fire-making skills. I could see her being really resourceful in that way. I think your winner is either Kathy or Greg. That's what I'm going to say. Depends on who wins the final immunity. I think that, Mary, you'll have a block with you at the beginning of your, you know, Henry's not voting you out. Greg's not voting you out. But I think Kathy and me and Alan might have to team up to try to vote you out.
All right. I could foresee that. The only other dark horse would be if Evan or Allie were involved. Cool. Allie can't walk yet, but I think Evan would take
minor details.
I was thinking about including them in this, but then I was like, I don't know if I want to put your kids' names without your permission out on the bag. It's up to you. Evan and Allie could be the immunity idols, maybe. Like, you could, like, they could be the ones that you...
That's a good idea.
They when they get out there, when they grow up one day, they're going to go out there and they're going to run it, because even though neither of you, as we have said, possess all the skills needed to win, you obviously have created two human beings who both will. Mary and Greg, thank you so much for spending your Friday evening chatting with Cousin Flip. And would love to have you back on later in the season. And we'll be talking about it offline for sure. So thank you so much and great job.
Terrific. We'd be happy to come back.
Thanks for having us, Flip. We will be following along throughout the season on your podcast. And we'd be happy to be a repeat guest.
Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As mentioned previously, we have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in lieu of ad space, I would like to talk to you about cat toys. Not the ones that you can buy in the store, but the ones that you can make at home simply by having a beverage. That's right. Pop open a beer, pop open a bottle of soda with those hard metal caps on them, twist that thing off, throw it onto the floor. Cat toys. We've got two cats and about 7 to 8 bottle caps on the floor. Cat toys, they can be anything. And we're back on Flippers Always Win. Joining me for our final segment, as always, my wonderful partner in crime and partner in life, Julia. Say hi to the lovely fans.
Hi. What do you want from me?
Today, we are once again going into a social media deep dive of a selected castaway. Julia, why don't we just jump right into it? Who have you selected this week and why?
So I picked this person for two reasons. I think one, because last episode kind of set us up to think maybe he's not going to be long-lived in this game. But two, because I really like him. So I picked Kyle Ostwald to do my social media deep dive on this week.
There was a deleted scene that I don't know how many of you saw where he ate some crab that they found. And it was the first time in, I think he had said 7 to 8 years that he had eaten anything that lived and breathed. And it was a really devastating moment for him. But he realized that in order to do what he's out there for, to inspire his family and win for his family, he had to eat, and he had the support of his tribe doing it. But it was very emotional for him. And he has an emotional story. He said in the beginning of the first episode that he lived in, I think, 26 different foster homes. He said in a post that you found that he didn't have electricity growing up in his home. A person that I think a lot of people are probably rooting for, but definitely seems to be in not the greatest position right now. I hope he can reintegrate himself into that tribe if and when they go to tribal again.
You know, I think he can. He is close enough with Tiana. I think that they both value that relationship. So I don't think that Tiana would want to screw Kyle over.
I'm not convinced that the three of Gabe, Sue, and Caroline is actually locked in lockstep. There's more that can happen there. Plus, I do feel like they have a lot of physical competitors still in that tribe, and I don't necessarily see them losing anytime soon again.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so why don't we dive into, again, your insights, your stalking, one could say, of Kyle on social media. What have you learned about him?
So Kyle seems just like a very sweet, genuine man. From his Instagram presence, you know, he's a family man. You can tell that his family means the world to him. He has a wife, he has two kids, a newborn, and their daughter's name is Ellie, but I think nicknamed Moose. You know, talked in his intro about how he met his wife right after high school or coming out of high school, and she just really makes him want to be a better person, which, you know, I think is awesome. It seems like he has a great family unit, and he just seems like a really genuine family person. And that's very apparent on his social media. You know, most of his posts are with his kids, with his family. And I think, you know, how this will impact his game. Yeah. You know, one, it tells me that he's a very loyal person. Mm-hmm. He really values strong relationships, which could be a good thing in Survivor. Could be something that holds him back, and potentially.
And we already saw maybe a little bit of that with the TK vote. He was loyal to TK, and he didn't, you know, he tried in the episode to, like, keep Tiana and TK together when it was fairly evident that there was some discord there.
Right.
So that already goes right into what you're saying, is this guy is going to try to fight for his people. But, and again, it could work down the line, but it's already worked to his detriment.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And thinking about that situation, that kind of makes me think a little bit more about what he shared about his upbringing, mm-hmm. that it was a little rough. And, you know, maybe he was expected to serve as the glue of his family in those tumultuous situations. And so he's already trying to serve as that within the tribe, which, again, could be helpful and could lead to his downfall.
Does he have it in him to turn against somebody he feels as though he cares about out there? You know, if he does, it could benefit his game. But also, like, sometimes we see people who, like, they play up loyalty. They seem loyal, this genuineness about them. When they do flip, they actually get chastised more if they make it to the end than another person who was known to be a snake the entire time. You think about the very first season. You think about Richard and Kelly, mm-hmm. at the end, you know. Richard was obviously somebody who was manipulative and blatant about playing the game, whereas you had Kelly, who she flip-flopped back and forth, honestly, but she tried to play this morally upright game because she felt that it was the right thing to do. but she ends up turning on allies at some point because it was better for her game. And she gets the short end of the stick for that move rather than Richard at the end of the day. So there's a double standard there.
Definitely. But I also think that ultimately for Kyle, his number one allegiance is to his family. He wants to provide for his family, for his children. That's the most important thing to him. And so I think that if he were to make it to a final two, final three situation, and he was called out for screwing over one of his allies, you know, he has a good argument to say, this is why I'm here. This is why I made the decisions that I made. And I think that people in general respect that in the Survivor world.
Yeah, especially when it comes from somebody who's coming from not as much. I think that, and another thing he's got going for him, certainly not a fair thing. I do feel like the people who get chastised more for that sort
are
of thing,
women.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
When a woman turns on you in this game, she plays that motherly or sisterly, whatever it might be, figure, and she turns out to be the person who stabs you in the back. A man's expected to do that, but a woman, and Kyle's not a woman. So he does have that working in his favor. I'm assuming the answer might be no, certainly not what it was last week. Are there any interesting captions?
Oh, this one's kind of fun. Sometimes life is just gravy with the cactus emoji. But in general, his captions are on the longer side, very descriptive. Oh, that is a cute dog.
No, that is a cute dog.
his captions are very much describing what's going on in the post and very sentimental.
What do you feel like his max length in this game is based off of that?
You know, I think if he can make it to the merge, he can go far. He's not a super strong physical threat. He's not a huge domineering personality where he will be a target immediately off the bat.
Without the presence of TK, maybe there's a chance that he ingratiates himself in a way that, because it seems like Gabe is leading this tribe, right?
Right.
Maybe he and Gabe can connect more without TK, because it seemed like initially early on they had that. Maybe that changes the dynamics of the tribe in his favor.
Potentially, or maybe without TK around, this allows him to bond with some of the other tribe mates, some of the women in the group. Like you said earlier, Caroline is kind of, you know, she's sort of aligned with Sue and Gabe, but it doesn't seem like that's the strongest bond in the world.
Right.
You know, maybe he and Caroline form a relationship. Who knows? I could see them working together, definitely.
Yes. And we now have Jessa laying on Julie.
And what do you think, Jessa?
Do you say meow? She says lick.
Oh, she's a good girl.
Yeah, she would not survive in Fiji.
No, she certainly would not.
Well, we always joke about if I was out there, got to the point where there would be a loved one's visit on the beach. Jeff says, Flip, here's your cat, Jessa. Jessa just read that, meow, 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 meow. And then Jeff goes, now Flip, the bond between a man and his cat, describe it for me. There's nothing like it out there. Okay, so for Kyle, who's Kyle's celebrity comparison that you came up with, and tell us why?
Okay, so I have two that are based purely on appearances.
Okay.
One is a real human that you may not know this person exists, and one is a cartoon character again. Do you want to try to guess?
Yeah, I'll guess. Can you give me the era of either of these comparisons?
So for the human, pretty famous in the early 2000s.
Okay. Jeff Probst.
No. No.
I'm going to guess Jeff Probst every single week somehow.
Yeah. He was on a reality show.
Howie Mandel.
No.
Is it Jeff Foxworthy?
No, it's not Jeff Foxworthy. It's not a competition show.
It's not a competition. I don't know.
Ty Pennington from Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
That's not a competition?
No, Extreme Makeover is not a competition.
There's some competitive. It's extreme. How could it not be competitive?
They're competing against time.
Had you not told me that it was uncompetitive, I would have gotten that.
No, you would not have.
I was on the cusp of Ty Pennington.
You do not even know who Ty Pennington is.
I know his general demeanor. I know that he exists. And I know that there was, I think, an It's Always Sunny episode that we recently watched back from the mid-2000s where they do the extreme makeover on the Juarez family, where they tie them up, kidnap them, destroy their house. they keep referencing Ty Pennington that entire episode. So I know who the guy is. I know what he looks like. He's kind of like blonde, right? Yeah. Yeah. He looks like he would have been in like Creed.
A little bit, yeah. He does look like the lead singer of Creed.
A slight bit. Okay, so you think Kyle is like Ty Pennington just because of the way he looks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Based purely on looks.
Okay, and then there's also a cartoon character. Can you give me a hint on that one, the era?
Honestly, I think this one's really easy. Era is probably when my mom was a kid, so like the 60s, 70s, but is still
going.
Relevant today.
Still relevant. Shaggy? Yeah, it was obvious.
Shaggy. It is obvious. He looks exactly like Shaggy. And not even like the live action Shaggy played by, that's going to bother me, someone. but the actual cartoon Shaggy, he looks just like that.
That's true. I got it immediately.
Right.
There's no editing here. That was my first guess.
Right.
And I don't know if that's going to happen again, honestly. I don't think I'm going to get too many first guesses correctly.
But personality-wise, he's not like Shaggy.
No. In terms of a personality for a celebrity, I'm trying to think of one.
I feel like celebrities aren't genuine. And so it's hard to think of someone.
I wasn't around when this person was at their peak relevance. What about Jimmy Carter?
I mean, I also wasn't around when he was at his peak.
He actually turns 100, I believe. What? I think he turns
today.
100. Is it today? No, I think it's literally today or tomorrow. I think Jimmy Carter, tomorrow is Jimmy Carter's 100th birthday, and he becomes the first former president to ever reach the centennial. Jimmy Carter was president 43 years ago.
He's still kicking.
That also, I feel like, has to be a record. Like,
it must be.
Like, how long does a president live after they left office? I'm pretty good at presidents. I was like a president nerd as a kid. 43, especially in the olden days where you'd be lucky to get three. a lot of them didn't. I think Herbert Hoover. I believe Herbert Hoover.
The only president from Iowa.
Is he now?
Mm-hmm.
He died in 1964. Left office in 1933. So he lived 31 years, which is, that's really long. Right. That's a really long time, but it's no 43. Carter's got him beat by a whole 12 years. Well, shout out Jimmy Carter. I'm not saying Kyle and Jimmy Carter would be best buds, but you got this nice gentleman who has a big heart, looking out for people, coming from not much. So I'm going to go with Jimmy Carter.
You know, I like that comparison.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know how accurate it is, but I like it.
I don't think anything here is accurate. I think that this entire experience is just one big opinion.
Yeah.
And that's good, because if life were just facts, it'd be really, really boring.
Yeah. If you're looking for accuracy, this podcast probably isn't for you.
No, this is Flippers Always Win the Opinion. If you had to guess right now, who do you think your deep dive would be next week as of right now?
Let's see. I'm trying to think of the promo for last week.
So we had Annika getting into that fight with Sam and Sierra.
Yeah, maybe Annika.
Well, thank you, Julia. Let's do a kiss. Gross. Gross for everyone. Well, that's a wrap on episode 2 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Mary, to Greg, and to Julia for coming on and talking shop. We will be back next week for episode 3. We're going to have Avery on, and you're not going to want to miss her. She's a hoot and a holler. Have a great week. I'm Flip, and this is where I would say a tagline if I had one.